Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Off Day Debrief, part of the SB Nation NFL show. I am Rob Stats Guerrera, and with me, as always, Brandon Lee Gowden. What's up, BLG?
Well, Stats, I have heard there are rumors. You have reason to be happy, so I guess that's good for you. And me, maybe not so much, but here we are. The playoffs are rolling along. I'm looking forward to the divisional round, which I think will be more exciting than a wild card round that was kind of a dud in some respects. But here we are.
I am very excited. Obviously, my team is moving on. We're going to get to that game. We're going to get to the game last night between the Rams and the Cardinals. Before we dive into everything, I want to remind you that the SB Nation NFL show is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That is code SBNNFL only at DraftKings. All right, we had a playoff game last night. Rams, Cardinals, I got to be honest, it wasn't much of a game. The Rams dominated Arizona right from the start. But to talk about that game, let's take a deep dive with our, I'm sorry, Blake Allen Murphy from Revenge of the Birds. These days are not fun days, right? Like our job generally is awesome because we get to talk about football. But the day after your team season ends, to have to perform the autopsy, I appreciate you waking up early and coming on with us.
Oh, yeah. You know, if teams are getting, worst day of your life happens or something like that, and you got reporters shoving mics in your face, you know, at least what we can do is, you know, get a good night's sleep ahead of time before coming on. And we tell you, it's pretty dismal out there right now in Cardinals land after the complete drumming by the division rival Rams. I believe it's about the 9th time, I want to say, at least, they've lost to this team with only one win over the past few years. Definitely something that we're accustomed to in Arizona. Unfortunately, happens in the playoffs this year.
The worrying thing to me is Kyler looked like he was panicking in multiple spots yesterday. He is just like he gets pressure and he just chucks the ball away like he was terrified that he was going to get hit, and he throws it up for grabs and the Rams took advantage. Like, why? What is going on with him?
Yeah, it's just been weird, you know, like someone I think compared him last night to, it's like when you watch Kyler Murray from the early part of the season, you know, a guy was moving around well, taking a hit, and then later in the season, at least, it just feels like, you know, the term Carson Wentzing is a verb, I think, was what kind of took over. What's interesting is that, you know, there was, I think, a report from Jeremy Fowler that came out that said the Seahawks the week before were basically picking the Rams, saying, hey, we played them this last week. Their body language was not great. I know there's been always comments that seem to pop up about, you know, a quarterback and their type of body language. But when you talk about that for the team, and in some cases it did kind of feel like the Cardinals didn't really want to be there for the Seahawks game. They start off 7-0, lose, I believe, at least 6 of their last 7 going down. Really, the story of the season, I think, really just reflects on not just the development of their quarterback in a lot of ways, but the defense as well. The offense, for starters at least, was a abysmal train wreck. It put their defense in poor situations, but it's not like the defense was stopping guys on the ground either. The Rams made it look way too easy up in that first half, and there was no way that Arizona was going to be able to come back in the second half at all.
So when we talk about, you know, level of confidence in Kyler moving forward, I think that's something interesting to think about. And, you know, I want to be fair here because, you know, you look at some of the other first-time quarterbacks in the playoffs this year, Mac Jones, Jalen Hurts, Derek Carr, and those guys didn't exactly light it up, as, you know, neither did Kyler Murray in his first NFL playoff start. So I think that context is important But I mean, you look at it here, he has 7 touchdowns and 7 interceptions in his final 8 games, really going back to that Packers game. Now, obviously, you know, he had been banged up during the season. So, you know, you kind of, I guess, wonder how much that was a part of it too. But like, what is the level of confidence in him moving forward? I mean, obviously he's your starter next year and everything, but like, you know, like, where's the confidence level?
Yeah, I think it really just depends on the first thing, at least with Kyler, is going to be figuring out what's his mental state as far as with, when you're talking about with pressure. Part of the pros that you talked about with a smaller quarterback like Kyler was the fact that, you know, he avoids taking big hits. He's either able to run or get away in times, or would be able to, you know, sometimes take a dive versus getting blasted. There was a play last night that Matthew Stafford, like, held on to the ball too long, had a long pass that he made, and pass was incomplete. He took a huge hit, and it wasn't one of those like late quarterback hits. It was just, you get rid of the ball earlier, you're getting that 15-yard flag. Why did you hold on that late? He does a good job of avoiding some of those. Even the air raid, as far as for how it works, tries to be able to pull in horizontal pass plays, try to stretch a defense out. If he's going to not be in a spot where he's having to be able to depend on his offensive line and looks to leave either a clean pocket or get skittish there, or as of last night, it really wasn't a clean pocket. The Cardinals were allowing pressure up the middle. There's going to be a lot of questions that people are going to say, hey, this kid's got talent. Is he going to be able to have the right level of coaching to not just protect him or put him in place, but maybe even just to be able to push him a little harder as far as taking one or two more of those hits? Or is this a spot of adjustment that's going to be needed? And that, I think, reflects on Cliff Kingsbury in this offense. You know, Cardinals to catch up, they go 4 wide receivers for the most part, 4 receivers. That's going to spread your offensive line a little bit thinner. And in a little bit of cases, it's not necessarily like Buffalo where you've got this deep, heavy play action. That's all shotgun based. And you feel like as the season stretched on for the most part, that a lot of the answers that the Cardinals had earlier in the season revolved around DeAndre Hopkins. With him out in the passing game, it really felt like the Cardinals had some decent games, but they never truly recovered. Even the Cowboys game that they had as a win was a game that you really felt like the Cowboys themselves just came out, did not look prepared for, got beaten up front. So there's going to be a lot of questions.
No.
Oh, yeah, no. Cowboys at least were soft. I even told people before that game, hey, everyone's picking against Arizona. I'm like, this is going to be one of their games. That's going to be interesting to see for the future, because a lot of Cardinals fans right now is like, you know, I think we said is there's going to be a torches and pitchfork sale. It's like the opening scene of Shrek, like everyone's running together, all stars playing in the background. You know, like there's a lot of Cardinals fans that are ready to not just run Cliff Kingsbury out of town, but just looking for a fresh start and hoping to try to salvage this quarterback that we've seen a lot of talent, but we've also seen, at least when the big lights have been on, he's always saying he wants that smoke, and when the smoke has come up, he just is kind of wilted.
Well, let's talk about Kingsbury, because you know, there's a difference sometimes between what's on your resume and what we see with our eyes. And you look at Cliff Kingsbury, and he comes in year one, he wins 5 games. 2020, he wins 8 games. This year, he won 11 games. Like, you look at that trend, like, that's exactly what you would have hoped for when you hired Cliff Kingsbury, right? Continued, sustained improvement. But then when you watch the game sometimes, the game plans that he's putting together, I mean, they're for that offense to look as stagnant as it did, you can't have that when you're supposed to be an offensive head coach. So where do you come down in the Kingsbury thing? If it came out right now as we were doing this show that Cliff Kingsbury was fired, what would your reaction be? Would you be happy? What would you be?
I think the first question, at least when you're looking at it, is if Cliff is going to be gone, does that mean that Steve Keim, the general manager, is going to pick a 4th head coach? Like, that's going to be an interesting avenue, because these guys have been essentially tied together. That, you know, the whole entire 2019 off story for the Cardinals was they tried to retool, try to be able to run it back. You know, hey, we're going to be able to put together a disciplined team. We like where we've been building with Bruce Arians. He goes on and retires. They move in a different direction. And they end up worst team in a almost historically bad offensive setting, at least with all of that. And looking at where they've built and improved each year now, you can at least say, all right, there's been enough that we've kind of seen from this season, at least for the most part, that, you know, we'll let them finish the season out. But they started 7-0, they got to 10-2. Fact of the matter is, when you start off 10-2, you end up finishing with like 11-8 I think it's 11 and 7 record because of the loss in the playoffs. That means that you lost five games for that one, but the seven of the last like eight, it was crazy for how it went down. And it's the same type of slide that you've seen before, the same type of slide that we've even seen at teams in Texas Tech where they haven't been able to win big games. It brings those narratives back up. And the thing that's craziest is Kingsbury right now, if you wanted to say like what was the complaint about him, he would go 8-8 every year at Texas Tech. They just couldn't get over that hump, at least. Or he would always go 500. He didn't have a winning record as a head coach. Well, he's 24-24-1 now in the NFL, and it's because of these late slides. So I think at least with Cardinals fans, the question you have is this really then another season of everyone's on the hot seat, you know, like coming in without that type of confidence? They're in the last year of their deals. In that regard, you have to say, all right, well, like, in order to then kind of prove himself, that means Kingsbury not just has to go out and stop the slide the second half of the season, go out and be able to put together a winning record. They probably have to win a playoff game. Otherwise, it feels like that's the hill, at least, to be able to climb to prove this narrative wrong. Just feels like it's almost a snowball rolling down a hill, getting bigger and bigger. And in a lot of cases, at least, if you're not able to overcome that, then the Cardinals, even if they end up with a winning record, even if they get to a playoff game last year, if that narrative continues, you're going to see the team probably move on, whether or not they end up having a winning record next season.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like just looking early ahead to next season, I mean, we're probably talking about Cliff as one of the coaches most likely to get fired like early in the season if there's a slow start, because I think the pressure is on. I think next year is kind of the make or break kind of year. You're referring it to it there. Blake, I know Keim is in the last year of his deal in 2022. So, yeah, there's a lot of pressure here, it seems like. Now, looking back at the Cardinals' collapse, you know, going 1-5 to end the season. The only NFC team heading into the playoffs that was not 4-1 and was instead 1-4 heading into the playoffs. I guess, what is most to blame for that collapse? And spinning it forward, what is the biggest need to get this thing pointed back in the right direction?
Yeah, it's tough because the way that you'd look at that is you normally would point out health in areas, at least like the team got back guys like J.J. Watt. They got back some corners. They were trotting out cornerback 6 and 7, at least, for guys off the practice squad against Seattle. And the cornerback 4 got hurt. So you're like, all right, well, this is probably a game that you're going to lose considering where the run defense is. But it really feels like in a lot of ways that whatever happened where the Cardinals were seemingly preparing or ready to adjust, it seemed like that the opposing defenses were either one step ahead or the Cardinals offense, special teams, whatever you want to call it, would always just seem to make one of these mistakes that would just be this either maybe not poorly timed mistake, but it felt like the area that it came down to is the Cardinals were just not able to get off of the field. And a lot of that started ultimately with the run defense. And this is part of where Steve Keim goes onto the spotlight, because you look at the finish to the 2020 season, they end up losing a bunch of games down the stretch, have to win one game and they get into the playoffs. Obviously, have a backup quarterback comes into the game against the Rams, so it made things a bit more difficult. But the ultimate flaw that you kind of see is when the run defense has not been great, the Cardinals go out, sign a bunch of veterans to try to boost a lot of that discipline, try to be able to carry through because they felt like the guys just weren't cutting it. Well, when you go and draft two first-round linebackers and you watch Isaiah Simmons looking lost in coverage last year, Zaven Collins is moved into a package as an edge rusher, and it's like the front office is frustrated the coaches aren't getting those guys playing time. You feel like the coaches are also frustrated at the front office. Like, you know, where are the guys at least who are going to be reading the discipline properly? And in that case, it feels like there's enough level of dysfunction within the Cardinals organization where they're not quite on the same page. I think you do look at some of the talent level of the team and say, hey, when healthy and when, you know, they're able to go on the road and punch guys, things are great. When it gets to the second half of the season and you get to the depth players and adjustments to be made, you feel like that it's a combination of, you know, some of the guys that are there at the talent just aren't quite stepping up, at least. Now, there's injuries there, but every team has suffered from injuries in COVID. The Colts, I believe, were down, four of their five starting offensive linemen and still put together a game-winning drive that Cardinals just couldn't do. And in that regard, I think you look at some level of being able to say, this team has really just been a vibes team. And I think I've said that phrase before this season where it's like, Cardinals are doing great, things are going good, they force another turnover, and then it's like their punter, you know, drops the ball. It's like, oh no, we're just not feeling great now, this is not good. And that's a kind of a level of toughness that I think the Cardinals did not show this season. Things were going great at 7-0, and then they come out, get punched in the face by the Lions. They've no way really to be able to respond for the most part. And that's been kind of, I think, the story of this Cardinals team right now, is having to be able to figure out a little bit of their identity. And some of that gets a bit of backbone, and that's going to fall ultimately onto the 24-year-old Kyler Murray's shoulders, as he's going to be kind of expected to carry the team, given the fact that right now he's the one guy that you feel pretty confident is going to be, whatever happens with this regime, whether it stays or goes, he's going to be there, and he's probably going to get paid. We'll have to see how much his contract is, and it's a huge cost for Arizona too. Gosh, they probably went from these big time extensions and everyone to like, all right, we're going to wait a season. Maybe we'll just wait it out and see where it goes from there.
One last question for you, Blake, from my end. You've been so generous with your time, and the insight here has been really great, but I'm going to have to be a jerk and make you envision a scenario where, all right, let's say NFC Championship game, 49ers, Rams. Ooh. Who do Cardinals fans least want to see make the Super Bowl from those division rivals?
I think at least in a lot of cases for those two, the one team that I've always kind of poked out about or said, as far as for the rivals, the Cardinals, like, maybe rivalry has been primarily with the Seahawks. And a lot of that's because the Cardinals beat the Seahawks at home lose the road. But ever since the Sean McVay era began, it's been one of those avenues where the Rams have kind of been like that Patriots in the division of just this kind of monster. And they've completely struggled. They still, to this day, I think, have only beaten Jared Goff once, even when he's with the Lions. And some of that is running that same system that McVay has. And the Cardinals at some point are going to have to be able to find a way to be able to beat that level of team and beat them. And the questions, I think, about whether they have the staff in place for that is going to be a huge question, considering that they finally got that ghost put behind them. And then when the playoffs rose up, it's just like, oh, here you go. Same old Cardinals, same old Sean McVay. I think the Cardinals fan base in that regard would be rooting for that. Not to mention, they probably would be rooting for the Niners in that regard, just because they would love to see Jimmy Garoppolo be able to take on the reins for another season and see if they could push back that Trey Lance rookie quarterback contract and all of that stuff. Just a bit. It's going to be an interesting time in the NFC West, at least. You don't know what's going on with Russ. Trey Lance has got that quarterback deal. You expect him to get some point of play, at least. We'll see how well Jimmy keeps playing, I guess. And the Rams, at least with Matthew Stafford, he's a bit older, but they still look like they're very legit. And we'll see how they do in the playoffs against the likes of previous Super Bowl winners. It's going to be a big test, at least, for the NFC West next week. You got Brady, you got Rodgers.
So what I heard was adopted 49er fan Blake Allen Murphy clearly cheering for Kyle.
I got plenty of Niners fans, I know, at least for the most part. I'll be happy for all of them. But man, this year, like, it'd be fun to see the AFC. It'd be fun to see the Bills finally get that first title. Cardinals fans, we haven't had a title since like 1940s, I think, at least. So we're rooting for the Bills to finally get their first one, I think would be the case. Their first one in a long, long time.
Well, Blake, thank you very much for the time. I know it's not an easy day today, the day after. You can read his stuff on revengeofthebirds.com. You can hear him on the Revenge of the Birds podcast. Blake Allen Murphy, thank you very much, sir.
Glad to be on. We'll be here all off season. Going to be a long off season again. Plenty of content, plenty of things to talk about.
So, BLG, the Rams move on. We didn't really talk about this from the Rams' sort of perspective, but this is the kind of win I think they needed. You know, they got punched in the mouth by the 49ers to end the season, and people were kind of questioning them. Oh, you know, Matt Stafford didn't play well, and he came out in this game, and he didn't have to do a ton. He kind of Garoppolo'd his way through it, but he didn't turn the ball over, and the Rams looked like they could do whatever they wanted to do in this game on both sides of the ball.
I think it was a good vibes game for the Rams. We were just talking about vibes. I kind of thought the Cardinals might be able to cover in this game because Sean McVay being a coward, because of Stafford's struggles going in. I like the Rams to win, don't get me wrong, but I thought it would be like a game. I did not see them necessarily just blowing out the Cardinals, even though the Cardinals were struggling. So for them to do that, I think is definitely meaningful and a step in the right direction for them, especially with Stafford. I mean, it really kind of all comes down to that. Although you see, too, they still have a pretty good defense that can make some big plays and do some good things. So that doesn't hurt to have that as well if Stafford isn't playing great and they can kind of lean on that. And obviously the running game as well. Everyone's talking about Cam Akers and how he's like actually just able to play after suffering an Achilles injury earlier in the year.
I still don't get that. Like, how is he doing that?
Yeah. So, I think it's a very positive outcome for the Rams. I definitely, it's a stock up game for them. Like I buy them a little bit more than I did before that game. So, you know, I don't know, that makes them favorites all of a sudden, but definitely kind of feeling better about their outlook. I mean, that's obvious to say, like, because they won the game, but it's how they won. It's not just that they won.
Exactly. So that's the Monday night playoff game. We still obviously have much more playoffs to go, much more show to go, really. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to power rank the remaining quarterbacks left in the playoffs, and we still have to give our MVP and LVP points of the week.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Back here on the SB Nation NFL show, this is the off-day debrief. All right, BLG, the first round of the playoffs is over. Unfortunately, Jalen Hurts and your Eagles are not a part of it. I'm sorry to say that Jalen Hurts will not be in these rankings, but we have eight quarterbacks remaining in the playoffs. I have my list. Do you have your list?
I have it, Stats. Of course I did. What did you think? I didn't prepare for the show? Of course I
did. Well, you know, I work with other hosts sometimes. Maybe they, you know.
Wow. Who's this? Who's this? I mean, there's only one other host you work with on this network.
Well, right? I do a lot of other shows. I do a lot of other podcasts.
Oh, you're throwing your Niners Nation people under the bus? Interesting. Right. Or maybe you're talking about Mike Florio. You're going back to your...
See, it's totally unclear who I'm talking about. Let's just focus on that. I don't know if... This is just my bias coming out, but I have number eight quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. It's got to be Jimmy Garoppolo. He is, skill-wise, I think he is the least talented quarterback left in the playoffs, and he's just untrustworthy, BLG. The only thing you can count on with Jimmy Garoppolo is he's going to give the ball to the other team at some point. You could feel it in that Cowboys game, right? Fourth quarter, the Niners are up, 23-7? And it's like, as long as the Niners don't turn the ball over, they're not losing this game. And what does Jimmy do? Rolls to his right on second and 10, trying to make a play. And he misses the guy who's open in Trent Sherfield by 5 feet, by so much that he can't even tip the ball or anything. And it goes right into the stomach of the Cowboys defender. I have to put Jimmy G eighth on this list. And to me, it was an easy decision.
And then obviously the play too, where a better throw to George Kittle, maybe. The bad throw actually helped him in that case, because it was incomplete instead of being a fumble, when it very much looked like it could have been a fumble at first on before the replay. So I mean, obviously, I think this is the correct answer. It's hard. Who are you putting under him? Now, obviously, I think the interesting thing is quarterback matters less for the 49ers. Obviously, like in the system. If you're taking Jimmy G in a vacuum, very clearly, I think if you're really a big Jimmy G fan and you're trying to argue it, then again, you can be like, well, you know, he can lean on these other things. And there is some truth to that. And obviously the 49ers were able to win a playoff game because of that. But, you know, what's the ceiling for this team if they're going to be making those mistakes, if he's not going to be capitalizing when Brandon Ayuk is wide open and he can't hit him? Like, those things are going to show up as the margin for error becomes slimmer. So it has to be Jimmy G at the bottom.
Okay, so we agree there. I hope you agree with me on my next number seven on my list is Ryan Tannehill of the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
Do you agree?
So it's very chalk here so far. But
okay,
yeah.
Okay, good.
I considered putting Stafford under him, especially like, so I made this list too before the Monday night game, you know, just to kind of a base.
Yes,
and I figured I'd adjust Stafford, and I don't want to overreact, and I still even considered put Stafford second to last, because like you said, it's not like he went out there against the Cardinals and like totally carried the team on his back. He had 17 completions, and he was really efficient in those and did good, but I think Matthew Stafford still has a lot to prove in the playoffs, is how I put it. But I do have Tannehill below him, just because Tannehill did end the season well, to be clear. Not to say like Tannehill sucks either, but you know, it's just he's not the straw that stirs the drink for the Titans. So that's kind of how it is.
Right. He can make some big plays, and especially against the 49ers, he made a ton of plays on third and long. He can make a big throw here and there. Just ultimately, he's not consistently performing at a high level like these other quarterbacks are in the playoffs. So I had Garoppolo 8, Tannehill 7. Now, this is where I think we're going to disagree. Actually put Joe Burrow 6th.
Oh, why would you put Burrow under Stafford?
And I did have Stafford 5, by the way, because I think that Stafford late in games has had success. I've seen him late in games lead comebacks, make incredible, crazy throws. And that went further in my mind. I haven't seen Joe Burrow do it. Not that he can't. I just haven't seen it yet because he's such a young player. And I love Joe Burrow. I think he's fantastic. It was super tight in my mind. Like the gap between them is very, very small. But I had Burrow 6 and Stafford 5. You know, for a while, Burrow was leading the league in interceptions. And I know that that's not always, you know, the most telling stat, but it does matter. So I had Burrow 6, Stafford 5.
So Joe Burrow had the lowest bad throw percentage and the highest on-target throw percentage in the NFL this year per Pro Football Reference. And I think he's evolved, really, too, as the stretch has gone on. And man, some of those throws in the Bengals game that went up the seam, like I just couldn't contain myself. I was like, oh my gosh, like that is amazing. Joe Burrow, like the reaction I had was to text people in my private group chats, like Joe Burrow is the MF truth, because like this guy is legit. He's really good. And I was on a podcast last week called Philly Press Box. Shout out to them. And they asked me for my Super Bowl prediction, and I hadn't really given it like a ton of thought yet for some reason, even though I really bad job by me covering the NFL, but I guess I just didn't like specifically lock in on that. And I haven't like made it officially anywhere. And I was like, you know, it's too chalk to be like Chiefs, Packers, you know, something like that, or Chiefs, Rams. I want the Bengals. I believe in the Bengals. It's crazy to say it. Joe Burrow is really young. And, you know, as I've talked about, these young quarterbacks are probably bound to struggle in the playoffs at some point. So from that perspective, I think it's fair. Like, it's not unreasonable to have Stafford over him. But I really believe in Joe Burrow right now. And I'm going to ride with that because I think he has the weapons there. I think he has the skill. He has the poise, the composure. I think that's such an underrated thing for a quarterback. The moment does not look too big for him at all. And I know it was only the Raiders, but like, man, I just have a lot of confidence in him. And I think they're going to be very dangerous. And I mean, we have Joe Burrow ahead of Ryan Tannehill here, and that's the team they're playing this weekend.
Oh, I would not be stunned to see Tennessee go right out of the playoffs. Like, no, that wouldn't scare. They're the worst one seed that I feel like we've seen in a long, long time. Let me ask you this, because you talked about, you know, quarterbacks in the playoffs for the first time. Do they tend to struggle, you think, because they're usually young and they just don't have that much experience? Or do you think that there is literally something about being in the playoffs for the first time, like Matthew Stafford, you know, like he doesn't have a ton of playoff experience. So do you think it's more the age or just literally like playoffs are different?
I think it can be both, you know, because you look at Derek Carr, he's older, but it was his first playoff game. And again, you look at Kyler, who is younger, but like, you know, he's not like a rookie. He's had a couple seasons under his belt and first playoff game. So I think there's something to it, just like the environment being different, you know, the higher quality opponent, just like nerves, all of that. I there's a human element to all this. I absolutely think it's not like the only factor. You can't just use that to dismiss why all those quarterbacks had bad games, including Jalen Hurts. But like it's a part of the equation. So yeah, I think it definitely, and honestly, just look at the data. Like if you look at the numbers of it, and I pointed out this trend to you, I believe back in the offseason, and I bring it up on the show like every week. But if you just look at like the history of it, you see it. Like it's true. Like the numbers kind of just back it up. So it has been a trend. And that's why I think it's a real thing.
Now we're getting to the cream of the crop here, remaining in the playoffs. Cream as of
the
power crop.
The cream rises to the top.
That's right. And right now at number 4 on my list.
Oh yeah.
Tom Brady of the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
What are you talking
number
about?
Number 4 on my list. And it's not that Brady is not good. Gosh. I mean, obviously he's had a potential MVP season this year, but he still is more physically limited than the other guys left in the playoffs at the spot. As great as Tom Brady is, and he's great, I'm not knocking him in any way, but the simple truth is he's not shaking a guy off, rolling to his right, and chucking a 40-yard laser down the field. Now, he doesn't have to most of the time. I get that, but it is still a physical limitation that the guys above him on this list do not have.
I can't believe this. I don't even want to defend Tom Brady's stats. Don't make me defend Tom Brady. I'd have him number one because
number one.
How can you not give him the benefit of the doubt stats when he's won? He wins in the playoffs every single freaking year. And would it shock you again if he did it again? No, because it's Tom Brady and I hate it. I don't enjoy having him there at number one, but it's inevitable. By the way, leaning into my always somewhat serious Bill Belichick take, still has not won in the playoffs without Tom Brady, by the way. I'd like to point that out real quick.
Can we? You don't even make me go there.
I know you hate it so much.
We're bashing Bill Belichick because he didn't win a playoff game. He took the rookie quarterback that nobody wanted, was competing for a division title in the final week of the season, and got to the playoffs in the first year.
Got blown out.
Because Josh Allen went God mode.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm just saying he hasn't won yet. Well, it'll be interesting to see if that ever happens. But yeah, I have Tom Brady number one. He didn't even really look amazing against the Eagles, but still, you know, pretty easy day for him at the office given Eagles defense and their offense not being able to score at all. So I don't know that Tom Brady is necessarily, you know, playing his best ever right now. But how do you not give him the benefit of the doubt? He always outlasts everyone.
I mean, you're not wrong. I can't argue that, but I look at the other guys ahead of him and I think if everybody plays at their absolute best, those other guys are better. Those other guys need less to go right around them than Tom Brady does at this stage in his career. Is that unfair?
If we're ranking by ceiling, if we're only doing like, you know, the highest possible outcome, I would probably put Josh Allen number one at this list. Because I think like if he's playing at his very best and going nuclear, which is not a guaranteed outcome, and the volatility of Josh Allen is what makes me not have him number one on this list. But if we're just going by ceiling, I could put him at number one. But I think, you know, Brady, but what's Brady's floor? Like what is the possible lowest he could be? You have him fourth here. I think that's a little low. You have Josh Allen above him, presumably. And yes. I think Allen's, you know, floor is way lower than Tom Brady.
That's fair. I have Allen at three on my list. And I mean, God, you just look at what he did against the Patriots. That is a flawless game. You know, everyone talks about, oh, well, nobody's ever perfect. No, what the Bills did against the Patriots, he was perfect. 21 of 25, 308 yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks. And oh, by the way, he also ran for 66 yards on the day. No field goals, no punts, no negative plays for the Bills. Like, that is perfection. So I had to put Josh Allen. I put Josh Allen at three on the list. There is volatility, and he does like randomly decide to lateral the ball at times. Like he does have a little bit of that self-destruct in him, but man, I when I saw that performance, I had to give him the edge over Brady.
And in the cold and against a division rival and against like, I think a defense that has been allowing the fewest points per game this season, if I'm not mistaken, in the Patriots. So like, you know, you add all that, you add all the context in too. And yeah, it's incredible. I do feel more confident in Josh Allen than I did, you know, in last year's playoffs, let's say. Not to say I didn't feel good about him. I did feel, but like, I feel like even better, especially looking back. And obviously this game over the Patriots, you know, helps towards that. But I do have him number four on my list. He's the second AFC quarterback ahead of Burrow and Tannehill there. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kind of looking ahead, I know that's not what we necessarily do on this show as much as you do on Thursday, and I can't wait for that episode, by the way, with hosting the show with a Cowboys fan. What the Bills did in Kansas City earlier this year, that wasn't like fluky to me. Like they put a beat down on the Chiefs, and that wasn't just about the Chiefs like not had it was just like, well, it wasn't the Chiefs' day. Like, no, that wasn't the case. It wasn't like the Chiefs had a bad day, there were a lot of bad. No, like the Bills beat them. They went in there and they just went out and flat out beat them. And that was like a statement win for them. I remember being really high on that at the time. So I think Josh Allen has what it takes to go back there and do that this year. I know, you know, returning to the scene of the crime or, you know, and, you know, thinking like, okay, it's going to be like last year, you know, going to play an AFC championship game and the Bills won't show up. I mean, this is going to be much more of a game. I feel very confident in that.
So I had Brady 4, Josh Allen 3. Number 2, I put Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Mahomes is obviously amazing. He looked, I mean, the 6 touchdowns the Chiefs scored in the wild card round, like 6 straight, just boom, boom, boom. Like, they have such a lightning quick strike offense. You cannot let up for a second, because I feel like some teams, you know, they kind of look short and then look to go deep. With the Chiefs, I feel like it's, we're looking deep right out of the gate. Like, that's our first primary goal. Andy Reid loves to take deep shots, especially early in the games. Like, the Chiefs want to come out and just raid you, air raid you right out of the gate. And it really, that really impressed me, because the Steelers have a very, very good defense, and the Chiefs went through them like it was nothing.
I feel like we've reached the point with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid where it's hard to like takes on them, because like, it's just, you know what to expect. So it's like, yeah, they're going to be really good. And they've made the AFC championship game, what, 3 straight years before this one, and they're looking to make their 4th. And again, would anyone be shocked if they did and then went on to the Super Bowl? No. And then won the Super Bowl? Not at all. So I'm Mahomes 3 here, and it's really not about him. It's like, I can't say anything bad about him. Obviously, it's more about, I just, you know, the other guys ahead of them are, I think, even that much better. And especially this season, they're like, they're the 2 quarterbacks in the mix for the MVP award. So really not a slight to Patrick Mahomes at all. I don't really have more to say on him, other than maybe they're almost like being slept on because of that, because all the focus is on Brady and Rodgers, that like people are kind of forgetting about Mahomes a little bit.
Well, the only thing with him is, and we've seen it this year, he can turn the ball over at times. At times, sometimes I think that there is a little bit of a vibe of like too cool for school there with the Chiefs, where like sometimes you just need to do the simple thing and not try to get crazy and work some magic. So we'll see. That was my only reason why I didn't have him number one, because I have Aaron Rodgers number one, and there's none of that. You get all the potential big plays with Aaron Rodgers like you get with Mahomes, and he just flat out does not turn the football over. So to me, Rodgers is number one. And I think that if Rodgers is at his peak, he is the best quarterback in these playoffs.
I agree in like vacuum again. And I think he should probably be MVP over Brady, but it's hard to totally ignore like the playoff lack of success, you know, like the one Super Bowl. Like it's hard to totally just put that away. And in these games in recent years where the Packers have kind of, and it's not all his fault, I think, but it's hard to like, you know he's part of that equation and they haven't been able to get it done. So I do think this year could be different. I think I am taking the Packers to make the Super Bowl. I do think there is something to the whole Last Dance thing, annoyingly, that will come to fruition. So I have him number 2, but it's really, you know, like a 1A, 1B. And again, I would put Rodgers as my actual MVP for the season over Brady, but just giving Brady more of the benefit of the doubt than Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs.
That's not unfair. I mean, the facts are the facts, and Aaron Rodgers has only gotten to one Super Bowl. He has had some very disappointing playoff losses at home. You know, they lost to Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers at home one year. They lost to Eli Manning and the Giants at home. That was the 15-1 year, I believe, right? Like, there are disappointing playoff losses on Aaron Rodgers' resume. That is 100% true. That is a totally fair criticism. He scares me more than anybody, though. I don't know why. Like, it's probably just the fact that the 49ers have to play him this week that maybe has me, like, a little more nervous than usual. He makes throws, like even in the game earlier this year against the 49ers in week 3, he was making throws 15, 20 yards down the field in less than 2 seconds, which is like, that's unstoppable. Like, no pass rush on the planet is going to get to him in less than that time, no matter how good they are. And he can still throw deep down the field and hurt you. That's a scary combination.
Yeah, the 49ers didn't play a bad game in that game, right? Like, it's like they played, I think, a winning effort kind of game. The problem is Aaron Rodgers is on the other side, and he had the ball at the very end of the game with not much time left, right? And he's able to go
30 seconds, no timeouts.
Yeah, that's what he can do. So yeah, that's absolutely kind of a problem. And I can only imagine that is tempering your confidence in the 49ers being able to go into Lambeau and win this week.
Yeah, I'm already uncomfortable. Like the agita in my stomach has already started. It was like, yes, we won. That's awesome. Oh, we got to play Green Bay. Oh, okay. So that's where we are. That is the list. So again, I want to just recap mine very, very quickly. Garoppolo, Tannehill, Burrow, Stafford, Brady, Allen, Mahomes, Rodgers. And what did you have?
Yeah, Jimmy G, Tannehill, Stafford, Burrow, Allen, Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady.
All right, we have MVP and LVP points to give out. You have two MVPs this week, BLG. Where do you want to go first?
I'm going to stick with my main man, Joe Burrow. I think he's the real deal. You know, I love Justin Herbert. This is very much a pro Justin Herbert podcast. I don't think there are too many anti Justin Herbert people out there. And if there are, I want to know who they are and, turn your location on online. cause I think we have to talk, but, I really believe in Joe Burrow. I think what we saw down the stretch is real. Like, I just think this is all, he's the real deal. I think he's ready now. Not to say this is his peak or anything, but like, I just think he really can hang with this team. I don't know if the Bengals can win the Super Bowl, but I feel like they can make it there. Like, I feel like they have that level of ceiling with him and the weapons that he has, which is obviously a big part of it too. Zach Taylor kind of concerns me a little bit, and I think that this could be their downfall ultimately, but there's no doubt in my mind. I fully believe in Joe Burrow. I'm all the way in. And I've given him a lot of love in the MVP section this year, and I'm going to continue to do it again.
The last three games, Joe Burrow has 10 touchdown passes and no interceptions. He is absolutely on fire right now. And the thing I think of with him, like you talk about poise and being in the moment, like I think of Joe Burrow, I think of the guy in the locker room after the LSU championship and after the Raiders game with the cigar in his mouth. Like he's like, yeah, I'm Joe Burrow. I'm here. I'm awesome. Like I love the swagger from Joe Burrow.
That's not just irrelevant. That stuff kind of matters to some extent. To have that swagger. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, not the same level, but like, the obviously the championship belt celebration, the Bears, I own you. Like he has that same kind of just like confidence and like feeling of inevitability, and it's great. I love to see it. It's a lot of fun. Bengals fans, they deserve that win. I'm glad they got that win.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like a lot of guys have swag, but it matters when your quarterback has swag. The sort of emotional makeup of your quarterback is a factor. Like Brady has it too. Brady gets the ball with 2 minutes left in the fourth. He's like, there's no way I'm losing this game. Like he doesn't even enter his thought process. I don't think that's the same for every guy. So I totally get the MVP. That's well deserved by you. I'm going to go homer for my MVP. I'm going to give it to 49ers defensive coordinator D'Amico Ryans. Look, the Cowboys came in, and I know they didn't look the same in the second half of the season offensively, but the facts are the facts. They're the highest scoring team going into the game. The 49ers lose Nick Burrow before the end of the Nick Bosa before the end of the first half. What a player that would be, by the way. Lose Nick Bosa before the end of the first half for the rest of the game. They lose Fred Warner in crunch time of this game, and it didn't matter. They destroyed the Dallas Cowboys in this one. Dak was under pressure on 46% of his dropbacks. They had 14 quarterback hits, 22 pressures, which is a season high without Nick Bosa, and they had five sacks in the game. That's domination by D'Amico Ryans' unit, and they are the reason that the 49ers are still playing. It is the defense without question, because if they don't have an elite performance in this game, the 49ers are going home.
There are big shoes to fill for D'Amico Ryans with Bobby Saleh leaving the Jets, and they're kind of questions, okay, can this guy do it? And he has answered the bell in a really big way. And I have always had a soft spot for D'Amico Ryans, who obviously played for the Eagles at the end of his career. And not surprising to me at all that he's having success, because always just like came off as a really smart guy, both, off the field, but also like football wise too. So really glad to see him having that success. And honestly, like I'm seeing Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon getting head coaching interviews up to three now. And I'm like, man, like D'Amico Ryans better get a bunch of head coaching interviews and honestly better get a job before Jonathan Gannon does for the sake of fairness. I know a lot of Eagles fans would like the Eagles to lose Jonathan Gannon because they want to get an upgrade. But in terms of like, league perspective and being fair about it, like, I think D'Amico Ryans has a case for being more deserving. I could see him, honestly, and this is a very, like, generous comparison, but I could see him being like the NFL's next Mike Tomlin. I could see him being that kind of guy. I think he has that kind of same mental makeup and everything, and I think D'Amico will thrive wherever he goes. I had him down as my MVP, one of my two picks, and based on what you were going to pick, so I'm not going to give him a second point, but obviously a very good pick by you, and thank you, Stats, and thank you, D'Amico, for shutting down the Cowboys, taking the sting out of the Eagles' loss, for sure. Like, I know that might sound lame, because it's like, well, the Eagles lost too, but you know, the Eagles lost, and they were underdogs. They're 8-point underdogs on the road against the defending Super Bowl champs.
Yeah.
In a season where they weren't really expected to do much, maybe like win one playoff game at the very most, as opposed to the Cowboys, who were feasibly, well, were first of all, favored at home, and they were at home, and, you know, were Super Bowl contenders reasonably, and lost in the first round in very hilarious fashion at the end of the game. So, I will take solace in the Cowboys losing. I will be just fine with that. My second MVP, we don't spend a lot of time on it, is Josh Allen. I mean, you kind of said it earlier. He basically played a perfect game. What more can you say about him? I love how he is such an effective runner at just taking off. I love how decisive he is when he takes off. I think there's a lot of mobile quarterbacks who sit back and they sit back and they sit back and they wait and they wait, and then they take off running. Where Josh Allen, sometimes he just sees space and he just takes off and he goes. And I think that's really valuable to have in an offense, being decisive like that. So Josh Allen has been awesome, and he deserves an MVP point.
When teams and coaches scout quarterbacks and look at quarterbacks in the draft and they draft a mobile quarterback, that game that Josh Allen just had is exactly what every team is hoping their quarterback develops into. That is the ideal, right? A guy that can dice up a defense for 5 touchdowns, and if things break down or things aren't there, he can take off and gain chunk yardage. Like, that's exactly what every coach is hoping to get. And it was an unbelievable, that's an all-time playoff performance by Josh Allen. Well deserving of your MVP. All right, I have two. Oh, did you have something else?
Last thing, I think I actually saw Pro Football Focus, like, Josh Allen was their highest graded wild card quarterback that they've ever had. So wow. When you talk about all time, there you go.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, I have two LVP points. I think you know where I'm going with the first one. It's pretty obvious. Mike McCarthy. I have been saying it all year, BLG.
We have been saying it all year. Yes.
Potato. Mike McCarthy is a potato as a head coach. RJ didn't want to hear it. Other Cowboys fans didn't want to hear it. He ain't it. I mean, just look at the game on Sunday. Look at the game. His players, they're undisciplined. They're unprepared. And that's why his teams are almost always unsuccessful in the playoffs. Like, that last play of the game, this is like so perfect, right? Dak gets up to the podium. And he's like, hey, we practiced that play over and over again a million times. Well, guess what? You've been practicing it wrong because you didn't know that you can't spot the ball yourself. You have to hand it to the official. A good team like the Patriots, I guarantee you, if they practice that play, they have somebody that's standing in there pretending to be the official, or maybe they just have an official at practice. But I guarantee you, they are not practicing it wrong. Of course the Cowboys are practicing it wrong, because Mike McCarthy is not a details coach. He never has been. This is the dude that's getting massages while the game plan is being installed. Like, no, it is an absolute disaster. 14 penalties for the Cowboys in that game. Franchise record. They've never had more in the glorious history of the Dallas Cowboys. They've never had more penalties than that. Their defensive linemen were getting defensive holding penalties. I've never seen that. They had multiple in the game. There were 14 penalties, BLG, and you can't show me a play that was flagged on video where the Cowboys actually didn't commit a penalty. None of them were ticky-tack. They were all egregious penalties. And once again, Mike McCarthy goes out and disappoints in the playoffs, because nobody, but nobody, does less with more than Mike McCarthy.
Well said, my friend. I mean, we had this conversation with RJ, right? Back in the offseason. I'm not making this up, where you and I were just like, dude, like Mike McCarthy is going to limit the ceiling of this team, and you know it. And, you know, RJ loves to bring up all the time that, oh, I can't believe people took, you know, Washington to win the division. And sure, whatever. It was a bad call by, I think, maybe if you did it too, or me. Obviously,
they did lose their starting quarterback for the entire season. I'll just point that out.
Again, which is a factor. But even so, like, the point was, though, about not believing in the Cowboys was about Mike McCarthy. So, like, were we wrong in that sense? It wasn't like none of us were saying that Washington was, like, amazing. That was never the argument. The argument was that we didn't trust Mike McCarthy. And sure enough, that turned out to be a pretty valid opinion to have. So it's crazy. And this honestly was just, again, so rich for anyone who doesn't like the Cowboys out there, especially, you know, coming from the Eagles perspective, of just how everything was handled after the game, too. Ugh. And like, to some level, that also falls on Mike McCarthy. I mean, like, Dak shouldn't say what he says, but Mike McCarthy should also have a system in place. And I would hope after the game, Mike McCarthy would talk to Dak and be like, you can't do that. You can't go out there and say that it's okay, even if you're joking, which I don't think Dak
wasn't,
by the way.
I saw the video. He wasn't smiling.
He didn't crack a smile. He didn't, like, nothing. Like, he was serious. And I get why a human being would feel that way and have those emotions, but you're the franchise quarterback. You're the $40 million. Like, you can't do that. You can't do it. It's a terrible look. It's a terrible precedent to set and message to set for, you know, like, for young people, young kids, whatever, people watching the game, or not even young people, but like adults. Just like, you cannot encourage a culture of throwing stuff at people, even as the refs. To me, some of that falls on Mike McCarthy. And wow, how about the Cowboys going out there in week 18 and acting like blowing out the Eagles practice squad was like this great step in the right direction for them, and like some genius move by them. I said it going into last week that, like, that was a big loser energy move to me. And sure enough, the Cowboys came through and they treated that. I know you can be like, well, BLG, didn't you take him to win the Super Bowl? I did. But I kept saying, like, I didn't realize they were going to treat week 18 like that was their Super Bowl, because that's the way they were celebrating. So, very well deserved for Mike McCarthy, LVP. I think Dak is getting off a little too easy here. I'm not going to give him my LVP because, you know, for as bad as McCarthy was, Dak really was too, in a big way. And by the way, Dak's contract starts to really, like, kick into effect next season, and those cap numbers are going way up. So they're going to need a lot better from him. A quarterback who everyone loves to hype up, but only has one playoff win, and it was against the Seahawks, I think, a couple years ago. And it was a game the Seahawks weren't even actively trying to win, so they kept, like, running the ball. They wouldn't even throw the ball with Russ. Anyway.
Pete Carroll special.
Yeah, so my one and only LVP, though, stats, is Jalen Hurts. Because he was terrible. He didn't give the Eagles a chance to be even, like, competitive in that game. He had multiple turnovers. He wasn't seeing the field well. He was inaccurate. He left plays on the field. Like, you name it. There are issues all the way around. And Todd Bowles, twice this year, has kind of come up with this formula to stop Jalen Hurts. And what does Jalen Hurts like to do? He likes to hold on to the ball and then roll to his right. Well, guess what Todd Bowles was doing? He kept, like, having his edge rushers really, like, collapse the edge on the right side, and really kind of having his defense, like, shade over to that side, and forcing forcing Jalen Hurts to either throw from the pocket or roll to his left. And sure enough, that worked out really well. I mean, stats, like, again, it's one thing to acknowledge Jalen Hurts is young. He's 23. He doesn't have the best wide receivers. You're starting Jalen Reagor, who's a disaster and also could be worthy of an LVP point, and, you know, like, all this stuff. But they got shut out. They were, like, shut out basically when this game mattered. They scored a couple garbage time touchdowns. Who cares? Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Those were clearly, they're in the fourth quarter. Game was well decided by then. The fact that the game is 31-15 or 16, whatever it was, like,
nowhere near that close.
Yeah, it was not even that close. If the Bucs really wanted to score more points, they could have. Like, if they really needed to, the Eagles were not in this game at all. And a lot of that falls on the quarterback. And it's a really big issue moving forward. It's like, it's a really bad final impression to leave, because now it's like, what do the Eagles do at quarterback? Because there isn't a great obvious option. I think it would be insane for the Eagles to say, Jalen Hurts is our plan A going into this off. They can't do that. There's no good reason to do that. I raised these questions today on Twitter stats. I don't have a great answer for them, which is why I was genuinely asking them. But like, are there any recent examples of a team being like very patient with a quarterback that they were clearly on the fence about, which the Eagles clearly are with Jalen Hurts, because we've heard the Russell Wilson rumors. We've heard the Deshaun Watson rumors. They're clearly not like all in on him. And has there been any scenario like that where a team has kind of been unsure and they waited and it like paid off in this really big way? And then kind of on the other side of that, like, are there any examples of a team moving on too soon and like really regretting it? And I really don't think there are, or at least there are as many as the other way around, that teams maybe regret holding on to players too long, you know, maybe like a Mitchell Trubisky or whatever. So that's something I think about with Jalen Hurts. I think it might be very well possible that they're going to have to fall back on Jalen Hurts because they can't get Russ or, you know, whoever else. Like, it's just going to have to be their best plan, their best fallback plan. But that's pretty disheartening to me, because quarterback is the most important position, and to kind of just go into another season knowing that you have a guy who's probably not the guy, like, that's not fun to me.
Those are two really, really good questions. The answer to the first question, where a team that waited on a guy where it eventually paid off, honestly, like, I can't think of one. I really can't in recent history. The only one I can think of, the opposite side of that, where maybe they let go of a guy too soon, some people I think would point to Ryan Tannehill, but I don't think Ryan Tannehill is like this major success story. Like, I think he's been pretty much the same guy. He just has a much better running game around him in Miami. So those are two really, really good questions. I just went back and looked at my notes from that Bucks-Eagles game. Two things jumped out to me. One, I felt like Philly played offense like they didn't think that they could beat the Bucks. It was like a lot of screens and quarterback runs and like, how about throwing the ball to Devontae Smith and letting him make a play? Like, did they forget he was on the team? Like, what was going on there?
He didn't have a target that counted. He had won at like 155 in the second quarter, but it was wiped out due to a penalty. So it was the first one that actually counted was like at 113 left in the second quarter.
Crazy.
And it's like, and he ended up having 11 in the game. But again, like that's just garbage time. Like, those were not happening when the game mattered. And it is crazy. Right. And it's insane, because I think you have to blame Sirianni to some extent for not, like, you know, really hammering it. But also, I think at some level, you need a quarterback who can actually force feed the wide receiver the ball. And I think Jalen Hurts is not doing that for whatever reason. And I don't know why, because like, Devontae Smith can get open. That's not the issue. It's not like he can't separate. I don't, there's no good reason for it. It's really inexplicable to me. And Devontae is such a good player, and it's a shame, because I think if they had someone who could actually get him the ball, he'd be a lot better than people realize.
And I just think that when you're coming into a game like that, where you're clearly the inferior team, you need to, number one, force feed your guys. Cause like, you have playmakers. Like, Smith can make plays. Dallas Goedert can make plays for you. That's the only way you're going to beat a team like the Bucks, is if those guys just use their physical talent and ability to just damage and shred a defense. So that you got to force feed them. But the game plan on offense was so conservative. I felt like it almost looked like the Eagles wanted to come out of that game and be able to say definitively, see, Jalen Hurts isn't the guy. We need to go get another quarterback. Like, this was almost like their justification for moving on from him, because there will be a contingent of Eagles fans that say, hey, we made the playoffs with him. He should be the guy. And it's almost like they didn't want to do that. They were like, look, see, we can't have this guy. Sorry. Next year, we'll get someone better.
They sabotaged him. I don't fully agree with that, because I think there were opportunities for plays to be made. Like, he had Quez Watkins streaking wide open down the field. Couldn't hit him. He had a play where, same thing earlier in the game, where he kind of locks in and then he ends up rolling left and throwing a short pass to Goddard or whoever that gets like tipped down. So there were opportunities there to be made. Maybe not enough to win the game, but they're enough to, like, again, not get shut out in the first half. So it was a really bad performance. And it's like, I think some people have been like, oh, you're being too harsh on him, because were they ever going to beat the Bucks? It's like, that's not the point. It's not about like, they lost. It's about that he looked lost. That's a big issue.
All right. I'm going to give my second LVP, and we kind of already talked about it a little. I'm going to give my second LVP to the New England Patriots media and the Boston media, who have been talking about how Nesson, specifically New England Sports Network, had an article about how it's not in the Patriots' best interest for Bill Belichick to come back next season. And like, I guess you guys are so blinded by the absolutely unprecedented level of success that the Patriots have had for 20 years that now you're calling for Belichick to be out. Like, are you insane? He is the greatest coach in the history of the NFL. This isn't like Joe Paterno at the end of his run with Penn State, where he clearly wasn't even doing anything, wasn't going on recruiting trips and none of that. Like, no. Belichick is still coaching this team. You had one of the best defenses in the entire league this year. Like, the idea that you should move on from him just because you didn't win a playoff game in Mac Jones' rookie year with basically, like, very, very little offensive talent around him. Like, give me a break. You guys are so blinded by, like, you've been on third base for so long, you forgot that you have to actually hit a triple to get there. It's insanity.
I didn't even see this. Wow. Good pick by you. Really creative off the board pick here. Targeting our own stats. We're media going after the media. Wow. Media.
That's
media
right.
Crime.
Wow. It's crazy to me. Like, you really think that Josh McDaniels, like, the Patriots would have been more successful this year with Josh McDaniels as their head coach? Like, come on.
That I just don't believe in that in general. When, like, teams, like, you know, move to the interim guy or whatever, you know, like teams, like the in-house option that's just been there. It's like, why couldn't he do this when he was here? Like, why does someone have to be gone for him to be good? You know, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I mean, for as much as I will say again, Belichick has not won in the playoffs without Tom Brady. Very concerning. Possibly,
how many playoff games has he even had in the playoffs without Tom Brady?
Like, I don't know.
Like, so, like, what are we talking about here? Like, that's insane to me.
You can't win in the playoffs without Brady. It's, you know, it's an issue, yeah. But we'll see.
Okay, let's have Bill Belichick coach that Patriots team the Bucks team last year and see how they do. Like, come on.
Well, yeah, because he would have had Brady. Right, exactly. You're proving my point.
Oh, give me a break, man. You let Belichick pick the team he coaches, I'm pretty sure he can win a Super Bowl too.
I picked Mac Jones and didn't look too good.
And got to the playoffs with him in his first season. Like, come on. People are using that as a knock. That should be that's a credit to him.
I'm going to throw the Patriots in the pit of misery again because no, I'm kidding. I do want to throw the Cowboys in there though, by the way, I forgot to do that. Sorry. For, you know, the, not even just the loss, but the whole, again, like advocating for it being okay. Well, for complaining about the refs and then Dak, you know, being okay with people throwing trash. So that's a quick aside. Had to put them in the pit of misery.
Please follow Sir Brad. He's going to give you a private tour of the pit of misery.
I'm sorry, what? That wraps it up. Stats, those are our MVP, LVP points for the wild card round.
Yeah, and the Cowboys thing, like, you, in a game where you ran out of time, you also gave away 40 seconds because you did a fake punt, and then you kept your punt team on the field, and then you pulled them off, and then you got a delay of game penalty. So just Cowboys, that is a little pit of misery-ish, I will agree. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of the Off Day Debrief, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, please, we remind you, rate, review, and follow the SB Nation NFL show. We are not going anywhere. We'll be here through the playoffs. When the season's over, we are still going to be here for you. So it is the perfect time to subscribe because there is so much fun stuff coming up. Obviously, we're going to be lining things up for the Super Bowl and, you know, Radio Row. It'll be a digital Radio Row this year like last year, but we're still going to bring a ton of great guests to you. So now is the perfect time to subscribe. BLG, how are you going into the offseason now? Are you going to throw on like the Bermuda shirt, you know, the Hawaiian shirt with the little drink with an umbrella in it? What do you got coming up?
And that's the Andy Reid special right there. You know, I've learned a thing or two. If I've learned a thing or two, that's the way to go. No, I will actually not do that, Stats. I don't know. It's kind of funny. I think a little maybe peek behind the curtain for people listening. I'm sure you might get this question as well, Stats. It's always like, what do you do when the games are over and the offseason rolls around? I'm like, well, there's still plenty to do. There's still plenty to write about. So sorting through, especially with the Eagles in general, they're usually never kind of too dull. There's never not controversy in some way, and certainly, again, with that Jalen Hurts performance, well, there's going to be a whole offseason of debating what to do at quarterback, and there are some Russell Wilson rumors out there, Stats.
Oh,
I'm sure
yeah.
You're happy about that.
Please take him.
Seeing him.
If you trade for Russell Wilson, I will drive to your house and give you a giant bear hug.
I would like that. A lot of people wouldn't, but hey, we'll see. We'll break it all down as it happens.
All right, everybody, enjoy your week, enjoy the rest of the playoffs, and we'll talk to you next week.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.